This is In Focus, the weekly public affairs program from KTBB and the Team Sports Radio, featuring members of the local community working to make East Texas a better place.
Well, everybody, welcome. Good to have you with us here on In Focus. I'm Roger Gray, and it is wonderful to talk to these folks. I wanted to do that for a while. Mary Jo Burgess is with us, Executive Director and CEO at CASA for North Texas. Good to have you here.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Appreciate that. Along with her is Sonia Burris, who is a community engagement coordinator. I just learned what that was. So welcome. It's good to have you both here.
Thank you.
Yeah. Mary Jo, let me start with you. What exactly, if you had to encapsulate CASA, what is CASA?
You know, it's a complex topic, actually. Mm-hmm. CASA stands for Court-Appointed Special Advocates. And Texas law requires that a child who has been removed from their homes due to abuse or neglect is appointed a guardian ad litem. Mm-hmm. And in our state, the courts appoint CASA to that role. And that means we, in essence, become an extension of the judge, become his eyes and ears in checking on the children at their foster placements, gathering facts, observations, and then reporting that back in the court so our judges can make decisions on the well-being of the children.
Okay. Which is, you would think that would require being an attorney, for example.
So there can be attorneys appointed, but mm-hmm. then that requires paying them.
Well, okay. There's the rub. I see. I understand. We're talking about children who come from a some sort of problematic family situation.
Correct.
And you guys don't come into play until they've been removed.
That
right?
is correct. So okay. we are actually appointed by the court once the allegation has been firmed up and the child has actually been removed from their home.
And looking at some of the history here, this began back in the 70s. Right.
Well, in Smith County, we were formed in 1990. Mm-hmm. So we are celebrating 35 years of service here in Smith County to our community. We also serve Van Zandt and Wood counties.
As I was thinking about the CASA movement in general, how was this handled before? Or is this a relative? I mean, yes, 90 is a long time, but is this a relatively new phenomenon of needing an advocate for the children?
So it started in Seattle, Washington, when a judge felt like he didn't have enough information to make decisions. Mm-hmm. And he thought, what a great way for our community citizens to get involved. Let's take someone passionate for children. Let's train them, utilize their observation skills and their ability to connect with a child, have them go out into the community where the judges couldn't go, mm-hmm. and the attorneys have too big of a caseload.
Right.
And so it became an extension of the court system, and to your point, you know, was mm-hmm. formed years ago, and then has expanded throughout our country.
Yeah. And you guys have been doing this, obviously, as you just said, for 35 years now.
Correct.
So happy anniversary, first of all. Sonia, what does the community engagement coordinator do?
As a community engagement coordinator, I recruit, train, and support our community volunteers that work directly with these children. We have a huge need in our area for volunteers. Currently, we have over 100 kids that need a volunteer to work one-on-one with them. Mm-hmm. And what I do is through community events, through talking to different groups, whether it be civic groups, church groups, any kind of group, mm-hmm. and let them know what our need is, what the children's needs are, to have a volunteer that works one-on-one with them. And then we bring them in, we go through an interview process, and once they go through that, we set them up for training. And it's an in-depth training program.
I would imagine. Yeah.
Yes, so many possibilities out there with every child being different, every situation being different. And so we go through a training program over a series of four training classes and get them involved in and let them see as much as possible about what it looks like to be an advocate for these children, how they can really get to know the children, let the judge know, let the courts know what is in the best interest. They are taught how to become the voice of that child in court. And it, like I said, it's a pretty in-depth process that we go through, but that's we have at least one other person and then others that help us out in the training process. They're at our CASA facility here in Tyler. Mm-hmm. And like Mary Jo said, we have a huge need in Tyler, Van Zandt, and Wood counties for volunteers to work one-on-one with these kids right now.
How many kids do you guys work with right now?
We serve about 500 a year.
Wow.
Yes. Wow.
That's a big load. Yeah.
It's too many.
Mm-hmm. And how many volunteers do you have to service those needs?
Not nearly enough, Roger. So we have a little over 100. Mm-hmm. And you can imagine if we're serving 500 kids, not all at one time.
Mm-hmm.
But we would love to double that number.
Sure.
So every single volunteer is gold to us.
Does each volunteer have only one child, or do they handle multiple cases?
That's a fantastic question. Mm-hmm. Because we assign them to one case.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a case, as you can imagine, may have siblings.
Ah,
so
good point.
Often it is not just one child,
mm-hmm.
But usually, you know, a couple. One thing that Sonia and I love to do is assign two volunteers, a husband and wife, or two friends,
mm-hmm.
that are assigned to the group together, and then they can advocate for the children as a couple.
And I was looking at, luckily you put up a very simple chart for somebody like me to watch, to look at, concerning all the steps in the process. Now, this occurs after the child is in foster care. The child is no longer at the home.
Correct.
Right. So I'm guessing you have to work with the foster parents and all of that.
Yes, we do. We work with the foster parents through the children. We try to get to know as much about that child's life as possible, which also includes getting to know the biological family that the children were removed from.
Mm-hmm.
In the state of Texas, our first goal is to reunify those children with their biological parents, if at all possible. Sometimes we know up front that that might not even be a possibility.
Okay.
So we move forward from there. But we always try and get to know as much about everyone involved in that child's life so that we're able to advocate in their best interest and know what that best interest is.
Depending on how severe the circumstances are,
of
I
course.
Gather, in the family. It sounds as though whatever the problem may be is quite often, I get, correctable. Maybe that's not the right term, but it's at least solvable to reunite the child with the family. What kind of situations have you run across where that is possible?
You say solvable. It really depends on if the parent, and oftentimes it's one parent,
mm-hmm.
Is willing and able to follow the services that the judge has prescribed
and
ordered. So sometimes there's a parent incarcerated. So there's a variety of reasons, and what we've encountered, drug abuse,
mm-hmm.
is a big factor.
Yeah.
Often it's a single parent that brings in a boyfriend or a girlfriend, and mm-hmm. they're the ones that are abusive.
Oh, okay. And it almost, looking at the chart, it sounds almost as though the caseworker, it's almost like a big brother, big sister situation.
There is a little bit of that.
Yeah.
Yes. It's really, it's like an onion. There's so many levels of what our staff and our volunteers do.
Mm-hmm.
They become a little bit of that mentor, the big brother, big sister type role.
Mm-hmm.
They also become a detective in investigating and using observation skills.
Mm-hmm.
They check on the placement itself and see if the placement is safe for the children. And believe it or not, there are many times that the placement is not safe.
Really?
Really. They become an educational advocate.
Mm-hmm.
They check on how the child's doing in school and may advocate within the school system for remedial help. They check on their medical records, dental, become, again, an advocate. They may feel like the child is overly medicated.
Okay.
They're not an expert in any of these areas.
Right.
It's just feelings and observations and fact gathering.
Which is what a good parent would do.
Precisely.
You know,
exactly.
You can tell when the child has a toothache, time to go to the dentist, et cetera, et cetera. So this sounds very time consuming, quite frankly.
It can be time consuming when you look at all the different aspects of it, but there are different people that are involved in the child's life.
Mm-hmm.
Volunteer advocate, our volunteers spend an average of anywhere from 4 to 12 hours per month working on their case once they go through the training period.
Okay.
And so it's not as big, you know, outlay of time as some people would think, because we do have volunteers that feel like, I just don't have time to do this.
Right.
Anybody has time to do it. You have such a tremendous backup system with our case supervisors and everybody at CASA. And then there's also the attorney ad litem that's involved in the child's life.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are caseworkers involved too. So everybody plays a key part in this.
Right.
But our advocates, they're the ones that really get to know that child best and what is going to be in their best interest. And so they only spend anywhere from 4 to 12 hours per month working on the case. So it's not as time consuming as one might think.
It kind of sounds like you're almost a surrogate parent. Yeah. Yeah. So the training has to be pretty intensive, I would think.
Yes, it is. It is. We have.
What's involved?
Okay, to become, kind of start you from the beginning.
Yeah.
Once we go, we find someone that is interested.
You have to be over 20. You have to be 21.
You have to be at least 21 years old, and you have to be able to pass an FBI background check.
Okay.
Once we go through that, and then this is an ongoing court case that these kids are involved in, so that's why we have to be careful about backgrounds. Once we go through this, then we set them up for an interview. We go through the interview. We make sure they pass some basic informational questions, and then we set them up for training. Training involves about 12 to 16 hours of work that they do on their own at home to prepare them for 4 classes that they go through.
Okay.
Our classes are 4 hours each in our facility.
Okay.
And so it can be very intensive. There can be some very emotional times. Some of the training videos that we show, the scenarios that we talk about are hard. We have volunteers that come from all kinds of backgrounds, so we don't know what kind of trauma have they had in their past. We have so many volunteers that come in that use the really hard trauma that they've gone through in their past, and they've come through that and they've done well with it. They want to use what they've learned to help these children that are going through some of the similar situations that they went through as children.
I would think, and that would be very useful. Billy, I've been there. Let me tell you how.
Yes. And then we have volunteers that come through that have the absolute dream childhood, have never had any adversity or anything like that. They use that to show these children that it doesn't have to be the way it's been before. This is, you know, there is goodness in this world. There are people out there that can really help you.
So whatever your background is, it can be useful.
Exactly.
In mentoring this child.
And we work hard with our case supervisors and our program director to match these volunteers up with a case that's going to be most appropriate for them once they finish their training and they get sworn in by the court system.
It sounds like the training is kind of rigorous. Yeah.
It can be.
Yeah.
We make it fun. It's a hard subject.
Sure.
I mean, you have to face it. This is a lot of hard stuff that these children are going through.
Right.
And we have to prepare the volunteers so that they can see that, you know, it's not going to all be rosy. You're not going to sit down and play games in color every time you see your child. Some of it's going to be hard. And so we prepare them for that. And we are able to help match them up with what we feel like is going to be the best case. But it's ultimately up to them if they accept a case or not.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so you do get the choice.
Yes.
Yeah. Walk me through a typical case. You find a child in a situation or removed from a situation, and you think you got the right volunteer for that. What happens next?
So the first step, again, is to look at the case history. Mm-hmm. And for the volunteer to determine, yes, this interests me. I think I've got the skill set. There's a connection of some type. It could be even, oh, the child likes to play basketball. I like to play basketball.
Okay.
And then they sit down with their case supervisor, staff person. Mm-hmm. They explore it all. And they go out and visit the child in person. Mm-hmm. And the case supervisor may come with them. They gather, again, observations. They learn about the child. They may take them to McDonald's for a Happy Meal.
Okay.
Whatever it is that the volunteer wants to do. And then when the case goes to court, that's when they're reporting in court. But in the meantime, they're still building that relationship. They follow that case all the way through, which is usually at least a year. They may go, again, to the school, to sibling visits, to a visit with the parent, and they're continually interacting with all of those other parties that Sonia mentioned are involved in the case so that they have a complete picture of what's going on with that child so they really do know how to advocate for best interests.
That first meeting, I'm guessing, we're talking about it as though the kid is completely open to this. The child may be confused already. By the fact that I'm out of a bad situation, but those are my folks, and they're getting used to a foster situation, and now this person, who's going to advocate for them.
Correct.
I'm guessing that first meeting or two can be a little difficult, awkward.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so to help break that ice, we have a room full of toys and stuffed animals and blankets and anything that we learn that maybe the child likes a certain color.
Mm-hmm.
So we try to find something to bridge that gap and make it a little bit more easy that first time.
Okay.
Often these children, Roger, are moved from placement to placement.
Oh.
And sometimes the older they get, the more challenging it is because those teenagers are the ones that are more frequently moved and usually stay in the system a little bit longer. So anyone with a heart for teenagers is of particular interest to us because they kind of got your number. And they make it a little bit harder sometimes, but the end of the journey is so rewarding no matter what age you work with.
Yeah, you're right. I, in my mind, I've been thinking about, you know, small children, et cetera, getting them out before it gets too bad and that kind of thing. But teenagers, quite often, there's a lot of personality already developed. They're becoming young adults.
Yes.
And is that sometimes tougher to overcome for the advocate?
Not necessarily tougher to overcome. Mm-hmm. But the building a relationship, the bonding is so critical. And the trust is crucial.
Mm-hmm.
So once that teenager trusts that adult, then we find that they will tattle on themselves. If they run away from the facility, they always call their advocate and say, this is where I am. Or it's very interesting.
Can you come get me? Yeah, whatever.
Those teenagers, and they'll continue to have a relationship often, even when the case is resolved, and still have times that they'll call that advocate as their trusted confidant and ask them for their advice.
Again, with teenagers, I'm guessing there are more experiences there, more for them to overcome. And they're probably a little suspicious at this point. Oh, it's your job to make me feel better or whatever.
Yes.
I know somebody told you have to be here, that kind of thing.
But again,
a suspicion, I guess, a cynicism, I guess.
Exactly. But once you've developed that trust and they find that the volunteer is worthy of that, that is priceless.
Can you give me examples, obviously no names or anything like that, that you've dealt with that maybe kind of stick out in your mind, you know, a great transformation, a great outcome?
Oh, so many.
Okay.
One I'll share with you is two teenage boys that mm-hmm. were in the system.
Oh, that's a problem already, yeah. Having been one, I can tell you that's a problem right there.
They had witnessed domestic violence in their home. Mm-hmm. They had also been involved in juvenile justice.
Okay.
And to make a long story short, years later, after they aged out of the system, mm-hmm. I received an application during COVID and did a phone interview mm-hmm. with this amazing candidate. Turned out he was one of our former foster youth who
wow.
was involved in a similar capacity as a career, mm-hmm. had gone on to get his master's degree here at
wow.
UT Tyler,
wow.
and was doing so well and was even making so much money I couldn't afford to hire him. But
wow.
what a success story on how he took adversity uh-huh. and really turned it into making himself a success, because he was not going to be held down.
Mm-hmm.
His advocate kept building him up and telling him what he could be, whatever he wanted to be.
Yeah.
And he did.
Oh.
And became quite a success.
And again, this is something I had not thought about. At times, the situation they're in may lead them down a wrong path. So you got that to deal with as well, you know, as you said, the juvenile justice system.
Yes. In another case, teenager again mm-hmm. was involved in, had a family that was involved in gangs mm. and drug dealing.
Oh, wow.
And he ran away from that situation and was out homeless on the streets and turned himself in to CPS
mm-hmm.
Because it started getting too hot to live out on the streets.
Yeah.
And so part of the advocating for this teenager was to move him away mm-hmm. from the originating area where he wouldn't get drawn back into that gang situation.
Oh, so sometimes geographic relocation.
Often.
Yes. Really?
Yes.
Yeah. In my television days, I was racing my hair to the end of my TV career. In my television days, I did a series of stories on homelessness, and it becomes a lifestyle if you don't nip it in the bud.
And often happens when children or youth age out of foster care.
Where do I go now? Yeah.
Right. There are many choices available to them, many resources.
Mm-hmm.
But as you mentioned earlier, you know, teenagers typically have family and adults
mm-hmm.
that guide them, help them figure out what choices do you want.
Sure.
Do you want to go to school? Do you want this job? Here's how to get it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, these teenagers don't necessarily have that. So when they see that little bit of freedom, they think it's great to be out on the streets and be their own boss, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And they quickly find out that they're homeless, without food, without shelter.
Right.
And who do they call again? Hopefully back to that advocate who
mm-hmm.
races in and helps them obtain resources.
So what are you looking for in your advocate, your potential advocates? What stand, when you do the interview, what are red flags and what are green flags for you?
Definitely the green flag is we want somebody that has a heart for children and
mm-hmm.
wants to help. That's the biggest thing.
Okay.
And is able to devote the time. And like
mm-hmm.
I said, there's not a huge time of devotion that's required, but they need to be able to devote some time to it.
Mm-hmm.
Red flags would be somebody that is wanting to do this to improve their resume.
We see
that from time to time.
Really?
And they don't really, you can tell through the questions and all
uh-huh.
that we ask that their heart isn't really in it. They just want it to look good.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably one of the biggest ones. That and the potential for maybe criminal background, something
yeah.
an arrest or something like that in the background.
And ergo the background check.
Right,
yeah.
right. And these kids are in an ongoing criminal case, and
mm-hmm.
so, you know, through the court system. And so we have to be very careful about that. And we, through time, develop the skills of asking the leading questions without actually asking the question directly, you know, to try and bring that conversation out. Mm-hmm. And I found that the more that people talk, the more information they give about themselves and just kind of getting to know that person. You know, there's not a lot of people out there that I believe that couldn't be a good volunteer. Mm-hmm. I think people need to give themselves a chance and to give that opportunity to our children in foster care to have someone advocating for them, because we have way too many children right here in our community, but all over the state. You know, we often, when we're doing events and talking to people, there might be people outside of the counties that we cover, and I tell them, contact your local CASA organization, because there are kids everywhere. I wish there weren't. Mm-hmm. There are kids everywhere that need a CASA volunteer.
Is it easier? Obviously, we want to be as open as possible, but is it easier for a man to be an advocate for a boy and a woman for a girl, being able to identify?
Not necessarily.
Really?
Sometimes that is the case. Mm-hmm. But as Sonia mentioned earlier, we really work hard to match experiences, mm-hmm. Skill sets, interests of the volunteer with those of the case.
Okay.
And so sometimes it may be that a female has a lot of understanding of ADHD.
Okay.
And the child has ADHD. So sometimes it is the gender. Sometimes it's race. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's religion. Sometimes it's age. It's case by case and child by child.
Yeah. You want somebody, obviously, who will put the child at ease and that the child can be open with. You don't just need advocates, by the way. I was looking at the website. You're looking for volunteers for several things.
Always. We have project opportunities. Mm-hmm. We have sometimes fundraising events. We have donated items that we have to get ready for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
So we always have different opportunities for people to partner with us, or businesses to partner with us and do a teen hygiene item drive or school supplies.
And something as simple as sorting toys and taking care of the office and that sort of thing.
Yes, there's something for everyone.
Okay. How are you guys funded? I'm sure like volunteers, there's not enough of it, but
we are very diversified in our funding.
Mm-hmm.
So some does come from the federal government and then goes through Texas. That's a portion of it, and you can imagine with everything going on.
I was
going
to say right now, there's probably not much of that. You know?
So that's always the uncertainty of that.
Mm-hmm.
There's individual donations, there's foundations, there's mm-hmm. grants, there's our fundraising activities. So I try really hard to keep us diversified so that we're not depending on any single one source to make sure that we have no gaps in serving the kids.
Well, as we record this, just a few days ago, you guys had an event, right?
We had a very wonderful
event. How did it go?
It was great. We had the biggest turnout that we've had since pre-COVID. So it means people are back in the community
mm-hmm.
and supporting us. We met our financial goal.
Mm-hmm.
That's always a big celebration. It was a good opportunity for people to learn more about what the organization does, everybody to come together in a happy way
mm-hmm.
For something that's a dark topic.
I mean, you're dealing with problems. You're dealing with family problems, and some of them probably pretty ugly.
Absolutely.
Yeah. If somebody wants to help, if somebody thinks, hey, I'd be good at that, what do they do?
First step is either to call our office or go on to our webpage,
mm-hmm.
and we are CASA for Kids of East Texas.
Yep.
You could even follow us on social media. Go look at some of our pictures and posts from past and see some of the events and things we've posted and what we do. And then take that first step. The interview with Sonia is a simple first step to see, is this a good fit for you? There's no harm in saying, okay, this isn't for me.
Yeah. Well, and that's probably what you're determining as well.
Yes.
Are they as enthused once they know more about it?
Yeah. Yes. Other thing I wanted to add is the fact that we talked about different backgrounds of people that make great volunteer advocates. You can have zero experience working with children, be an only child, and have never worked with children in any way whatsoever, and still be an outstanding advocate volunteer. So I don't want to eliminate a population because they've not had experience with children.
We have to wrap it there. Mary Jo, Sonia, thank you guys so much. Call CASA. Go to the website. Find out more. They need your help. And we will see you guys next week.
In Focus is a weekly public affairs program featuring members of the local community working to make East Texas a better place. In Focus is produced by KTBB and the Team Sports Radio. And we thank you for listening. Join us again next week.